Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Labor organizers are accusing the owner of Buffalo's Hyatt Regency of a union-busting campaign. The group Hyatt Regency Buffalo Workers United says it began organizing a union quietly in recent months, but once their intentions went public, management began attacking workers' rights. State Senator Sean Ryan is expected to join union officials at a press conference this morning to outline the campaign. Dozens of workers and military personnel from New York State will remain away from home to assist with expected relief efforts in the aftermath of Hurricane Milton. The crews from National Grid and several New York State agencies, including the National Guard, have been scattered throughout the Southeast since Hurricane Helene devastated several communities. National Grid says 160 upstate New York employees were deployed on September 28th and are expected to assist Duke Energy after Hurricane Milton passes across Florida in the coming days. Members of the New York State Incident Management Team have been working in the Asheville, North Carolina area to distribute 478,000 bottles of water, 28,000 gallons of bulk water, and over 20,000 MREs. And the city of Olean is putting together a homelessness task force. Formed by a resolution from the Common Council, the effort seeks, quote, proactive, preventative, and mitigative measures to minimize the adverse impact of homelessness in Olean. Representatives from area colleges, school districts, and churches are among those asked to join the task force. Their first meeting is set for October 16th. New York State's so-called even election year law will likely be argued in a higher court after it was ruled unconstitutional on Tuesday. The decision from a state Supreme Court judge in Syracuse overturns a law passed in December that would have lined up many local elections with state and federal elections in even-numbered years. According to Tuesday's ruling, the law was in violation of the state's constitution, which protects the election protocols in several counties. In a statement, Erie County Republican Party Chair Michael Cracker celebrated the decision, calling it, quote, a defeat for the Democrats' blatant power grab. An approaching fundraiser highlights the level of homelessness among indigenous peoples, which at 10% is the second highest rate of any group. Organizer Freddie Williams, a Six Nations Oneida member, says for many homeless Native people, their situation started when they were young.
You know, they're affected by the child welfare system. Individuals are living on the streets and emergency shelters, you know, temporary housing, you know, stuff like that. It all starts basically there. And ultimately addressing homelessness requires a fundamental change in perception, recognizing the systematic failures rather than individual shortcomings are at the root of this crisis.
Williams calls Fear Festival a combination of Halloween and the beauty of indigenous artistry. It'll be hosted from 5 until 11 October 19th at 142 Botsford Street in Buffalo. It'll include Halloween activities, Native artisan vendors, a car show, and music performances.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying griffs find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
Hi, I'm Emily Watkins, and this is the WBFO Disabilities Beat. At the end of September, New York State announced that Public Partnerships, LLC, will move to New York and become the state's main fiscal intermediary, or FI, for the Consumer-Directed Personal Assistance Program, also known as CDPAP. CDPAP allows people with disabilities to hire personal care workers through an FI. This change was included in New York's latest budget, and the state says they plan to instate this new statewide provider by mid-2025. Today on the Disabilities Beat, we're sharing part of a segment from back in June, where Chief Policy Officer for Western New York Independent Living, Todd Varwerk, described a bit about how this change came about and why this move is seen as controversial by many in the disability community.
CDPA, Consumer Directed Personal Assistance. It's a program that the state's been very concerned about for a while because of what they refer to as explosive growth. From in a 3 to 4 year period, from 70,000 people to about 250,000 people. Now, we can have an argument about where we think that growth comes from, but when we talk about CDP this year, what they did was they said, we're going to cut out all of the fiscal intermediaries, and this is the way that all of the consumer-directed and even the self-directed services work, right? We work through intermediaries. We work through agencies that act as our representative. And in the CDPA position, they're the employer of record for the aid that comes to my house.
They're the ones who disperse that money from the state.
Correct. Right. For the listeners to know, I'm a person in a wheelchair. I use 35 hours of consumer-directed personal assistance services per week. They come in to help me with the physical things necessary to help me get ready for work, keep my place clean, get me the drugs that I need on time, all that stuff, right? But it's not tied into as detailed a plan as the direct support professionals have. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of the same kind of work, and they get paid kind of the same amount that the direct service professionals get paid. But the state is worried about cost. Mm. State is worried about consumer directed being a $9 billion industry. So coming out of the governor's 30-day amendments, where they just stuck a whole bunch of things in that says, we need to reform this program. We're going to give the Department of Health carte blanche to fix it. Well, we're a little concerned about that because Department of Health doesn't necessarily come to the disability community and say, hey, how's this fix going to affect you? Mm. They issue an emergency regulation, and before you know it, no aide would be able to work more than 40 hours a week. So we fought that in, for the listeners, what are called the one house budgets. The governor comes out with her budget, and then the assembly comes out with their budget, and the Senate comes out with their budget, and those, all those budgets have colors.
And then you have the amendments, and then you...
Well, three people come in a room, and then they agree on one budget, and that's what the budget language is. At some point in this budget, they decided in discussion that they were going to have one fiscal intermediary statewide for all 250,000 people in the program. Now, the reason why they think that this is going to save money is because currently the number of fiscal intermediaries statewide is between 600 and 700. They're not even sure about the exact number because according to their research, 30% of those people don't fill out cost reports.
Well, and yeah,
as required by law.
And to be clear, there's been a known problem with these fiscal intermediaries. I mean, there was a report, I believe, in 2018 from the Inspector General of the Department of Health and Human Services. And they basically said to New York State, hey, you got to give us $74 million in Medicaid back because we think it was reimbursed incorrectly through these FIs. So we know
right.
that there
right.
has been a challenge with regulating these FIs, but going to a single fiscal intermediary, how is that going to impact disabled consumers like yourself?
It takes away choice. Imagine if we said to the DD families on self-direction, hey, all of a sudden, you're not going to be able to deal with that local agency that helps you develop your budget. You were going to give a gigantic state contract to an out-of-state guy who's going to come in and manage that budget for you. They're based in California or Pennsylvania or West Virginia. Now, all of a sudden, they've got a contract with the state and they're going to manage the services for you.
You can listen to the Disabilities Beat segment on demand, view a transcript and plain language description for every episode on our website at WBFO.org. I'm Emily Watkins. Thanks for listening.
The biggest rivalry in Buffalo High School sports adds another chapter tonight. Soccer matches are all over Western New York today. The Sabres prepare for their home opener, and a coaching change was made in the AFC East. I'm Jack Cruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Wednesday, October 9th. The Monsignor Martin Association has been dominated by Canisius High School's volleyball team since the turn of the century. Last season, their arch-rival St. Joe's snapped their streak of 23 straight league titles. Tonight, the Crusaders host the Marauders seeking revenge at the Kennedy Fieldhouse. St. Joe's has won the last four matches against Canisius in what has become a lopsided rivalry as of late. The Marauders have suffered only one set loss to the Crusaders in their last three meetings. Earlier this season, Canisius fell 3-1 at St. Joe's. Since then, the Crusaders have yet to lose a match. St. Joe's, led by senior Matthew Anzalone, looks to win the season series tonight at Canisius High School. First serve is set for 6 p.m.
Tomorrow night, the Buffalo Sabres welcome the Los Angeles Kings to KeyBank Center for their home opener. After an uninspiring start to the season in Europe, the Sabres return home with an 0-2 record, largely due to their play with the man advantage. At practice Tuesday, the focus was almost entirely on power play scenarios, breaking into the offensive zone, setting up off a faceoff, and getting the puck moving quickly from one side to the other. Buffalo went scoreless in their 6 man advantage attempts in their back-to-back games against New Jersey last weekend. When asked, Tage Thompson said that the Sabres got a little stubborn when trying to enter the zone against the Devils. The alternate captain said the work Tuesday was centered on breaking out with speed, which would make it harder for the penalty killers to hold their gaps. Tomorrow will be the first time Lindy Ruff coaches a regular season game for the Sabres in Buffalo since February of 2013. It's expected to be a packed house to welcome Coach Ruff back to Buffalo, but given their start to the season, the pressure is on the team to put on a show and display maximum effort for the hometown crowd. It won't be easy, as the Kings have been a playoff team in the West for the last 3 seasons. Puck drop against LA is set for 7 p.m. Thursday night. Soccer fans in Western New York have plenty of matches to choose from tonight. Niagara Women's Soccer hosts Iona for a conference match in Lewiston. After starting the season 5-1, the Purple Eagles have dropped 3 straight. Needing to find their winning ways, Niagara welcomes a team they usually have good fortune against. That's a 3 p.m. kickoff on NU's campus. Staying in Niagara County, SUNY Niagara hosts Jamestown Community College for a men's and women's soccer doubleheader. The Thunder Wolves of SUNY Niagara men seek their first win of the season with their kickoff at 2 p.m., and then the JCC women look to snap a 4-game losing skid at 4 at the campus in Sanborn. Down in Hamburg, Hilbert Women's Soccer will fight for their first win versus Alfred State. Kickoff at Hawk Field is at 4 p.m. Finally, in the city of Buffalo, the Buff State Bengals women's soccer team welcomes Fredonia to Coyer Field. The Blue Devils have had the edge over Buffalo State in recent years, but the Bengals are rolling at the moment, coming into tonight's match undefeated in league play. Fredonia sits at 1-2 in SUNYAC play thus far. Kickoff tonight is at 7 o'clock. Those same two programs meet on the men's pitch as well, with Fredonia playing host to Buffalo State men's soccer this evening. The Bengal men are undefeated 11 matches into the season, while the Blue Devils sit at 6-5-2 on the year. That kickoff is also set for 7 o'clock. Following back-to-back crushing losses, a head coach has been fired in the AFC East, taking the fault for their lackluster last 2 performances. That's right, the New York Jets have fired head coach Robert Saleh ahead of their Week 6 meeting with the Buffalo Bills. While fans are calling for Sean McDermott's job in Buffalo, it's the team they're facing next week that seems to be in disarray, as defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich takes the reins for the Jets as interim head coach. It was the first in-season head coach firing that Jets owner Woody Johnson has ever made in his 25 years at the helm. The Bills will be in the Meadowlands on Monday night for the divisional clash. The Connolly Cup Players of the Week in high school football have been released, with Pioneers' Gavin Schwab leading the way. The Panthers' senior quarterback led his team to a dominant victory over Iroquois on Friday Night Lights in Week 5, keeping Pioneers' record perfect now at 5-0. The full list of nominees is available on our website at WBFO.org. This has been the Scoreboard for Wednesday, October 9th. I'm Jack Cruiser for WBFO Sports.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.